it out, because we know that we will not give the enemy the victory to keep us silent and keep things bottled up inside.
Hello. Welcome to episode one of the Halfway Home podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Taliaferro. Halfway home is this life, this house that represents the space in between birth and the death of our bodies. It captures the details of spiraling spirits made in the image of God, rooted in pain, and destined to reveal the glory of our Father. At least, that's my truest belief. It is our quest for the ultimate archetype that is His love. Episodes of this podcast will make you scream, pound your fists, laugh, cry, hold your breath, and cheer. It's relatable, graphic, relentless, much like this existence. Sometimes it's painful, it can be provocative, and it's all about perseverance. This podcast is our real life accounts of destruction, dysfunction, depression, abuse, addiction, incarceration, marriage, parenthood, racism, counseling, revelation, redemption, ministry. It encompasses so much because as humans, we encounter so much. I want to share it because I know I'm not alone. There's healing in speaking the truth. And through this series of podcasts, we will hear from others like myself and like yourselves. They will share their stories and their disappointments and their pain. And as we struggle to find peace in the heartaches and desperately hold on to moments of joy, with each episode, we will embark on a journey that unfolds to reveal that through all of it, the victory is known as mercy, forgiveness, and healing and grace. We all have a story, right? Lord knows I have more than I care to remember, but you felt it too. I know you have. The struggle. And you know exactly how real that struggle is. The mission in life now is to change the verb in our struggle from is to was. To overcome in such a way that makes the enemy shiver in his boots. That's what this podcast is all about. Talking over the noise until it silences and gives us a chance to exhale and breathe and then process. In this journey through these podcasts, we will conquer the shame and disappointment as we move towards the light. We can do this together. I would be remiss if I didn't warn you that this episode is very graphic and it could be triggering for some who listen. I would caution you to please exercise self-care. And if you need to talk with someone, reach out to us at Halfway Home Podcast on IG so we can put you in touch with a certified professional for some help if you need it. Today, my guest is Sydney, someone who is very near and dear to me. Sydney is no stranger to emotional issues, but she's here today because as a member of my family, I wanted to give her an opportunity to, first of all, support me as I share with the world what I've been through. And number two, to be boldly honest about what she's learned about her auntie.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here today with me, Sydney. Yay. I'll start. All right. It's the memories that flash in and out of my mind, on and off, in and out, like a bad acid trip on repeat for years, tormenting me, temporarily making me doubt the goodness of humanity for moments and like eons at a time. I always dream in color. I have very, very vivid dreams. But when I think of these memories and I dream of them, they replay in black and white. Go figure. I'll never forget that apartment. We were only there for about 2 years. It was on the second floor of a two-story house in the late 1960s, Newark, New Jersey. Fun, fun, fun place to be. You enter the living room and to the left, I see the kitchen that sits at the very far back of the house. To the right, mine and my sister's room. She's 2 years behind me. First, I see her crib. And over from that, in my mind, I see my bed. This room where my bed sat was right flush at the front of the house, with my bed having a pretty bedspread sitting against the window with frilly curtains that looked out onto the street. And that street looked so friendly and full of life and like a nice suburban neighborhood that you would see portrayed in the movies, except this block held its dark secrets like that of a crypt. On our first floor lived the landlords. Nice enough couple, right? With a teenage boy, light skin, tall in stature, with a smile that would melt your heart. Good people, helpful, God-fearing people. I mean, you know, at least they talked about them. They had a teenage son that served as a babysitter for us from time to time. One evening, while he was babysitting, I walked from the kitchen after drinking my juice. As I made my way through that hallway, it seemed as if the hallway was like the directors would portray in a horror movie, how it just gets longer and longer and longer. As I walked my way through that long hallway, I watched him as he walked toward the crib and leaned down. And it seemed to happen in slow motion. "I think you're wet. Let's get you changed," he whispered to my sister. And my heart dropped. I felt my chest cave in and my mind went into overdrive. I had to protect my sister. I froze, though, for a second. And then I made an adjustment and shuffled toward him and tugged on his hand. And he looked down to see that I was just the way he liked it. Pajama pants off, panties down. There's that smile. Only it didn't make my heart melt. It made me numb. But at least his attention was off of my sister. I couldn't let what was happening to me happen to her. Protect her, I thought. But where was God? I was only 4 years old. I know what you must be thinking, but this isn't that, right? This is not a story that focuses solely on the horrific predilections of a predator. But instead, it's a story of survival. A story of that took manifesting decades. Right now, I'm going to go ahead and open up the mic to my guest, Sid.
All right, so Aunt Keisha, for one, how are you feeling today?
Wow, I'm very perplexed today. I am. You know, this is very new for me. So I have a lot of mixed emotions, but I know that I'm doing the right thing. I'm doing what I'm called to do. So thank you for asking.
No problem. Thank you for even being open and sharing that with so many people. My first question today was going to be, do you feel like looking back on situations such as something like that drove you closer to God, or did it take you longer to find God, or did you like seek home in him from that situation afterwards?
Whoa, that's a deep question, honey. I would have to be honest and say, no, it didn't draw me closer to him that I know of, that I can recall. Again, my thought, you know, where was God? That wasn't a thought I had as a 4 year old. This is, of course, me reflecting back on it, asking where was God then? But he, even though, no, it didn't draw me closer to him throughout my life, I can reflect and look back and see how he was with me through it all, how he kept me close to him. Because my parents put me in a Catholic school at second grade. They took me out of public school and put me right into the Catholic school. And so I learned a lot about Christ and God, because we were holiday Christians, right? We would go on Christmas and Easter. Mm-hmm. And even though it was more about the Catholic faith and their practices and things like that, still, I think he was being instilled in me. It was his way of working, you know, working in me and reminding me constantly that he is with me. I just didn't know enough throughout my young life. I knew he was my Lord and Savior. I believed that. I believed that he was the Son of God. And in my teens, I even went to church on my own every Sunday. And I did everything I could to just be out of what was a dysfunctional home back then. So I knew God. He was in me. He was with me. But I still wasn't able to connect how I could have an intimate relationship with him to overcome all the things that were happening to me throughout my life. I hope that answers your question.
That does. You mentioned growing up in a dysfunctional household, and you also did mention previously your sister. After that all happened to you both, because it did happen to you both, did that change how you acted around your sister moving forward completely, or did it only change how you protected your younger siblings for just their adolescence, or did that stick with you forever?
Ooh, you are knocking me out. Okay. These are very thoughtful questions. Me and my sister weren't close growing up. But if anything ever came up against her, yes, I was right there in the background. But Nikki was very... she'd take care of herself. And if she knew that I was trying to take up for her, she would, you know, jump in and be like, I can take care of myself. I remember one time, you know, specifically, you know, these boys were bothering her. She was like, move, I got this. But because we came up in an environment, I will put it like that, that it was what happens at home stays at home. She and I kind of carried that with us. So we silently endured not only that, and I don't know that she remembers exactly that because she was 2 years old. But there were other things that happened to us, and we endured them silently. We never talked about them with each other, and we never talked about them to our parents. It was only when I was 18 and she was 16 and we were sitting at the dinner table, because we had dinner with our parents every night, sitting down at a table. And I remember that they happened to bring up a particular house or particular people or whatever. And me and my sister locked eyes. And as we locked eyes, we both burst into tears. And, you know, my parents were looking like, what in the world is happening? You know, my brother's like eating his food, like, you know, look at us like, what is going on right here? And it was at that moment that we told our parents what we had been through. So there was always, if it came down to it, she always had my back and I always had hers, regardless of the fact that we weren't close. She, you know, she did her own thing. We had two totally different personalities. But at the base of it, if anything ever went down, and there have been times, she had my back and I had hers. So I don't know that it was always, you know, as a result of that. I think our dysfunctional household, you know, our parents loved us, but still they would be the first ones to admit it was very dysfunctional. I think the dysfunctional household is more of what kind of kept us, you know, we don't have to be close, but if you come up against her, you got to deal with me type thing.
Absolutely. So you said in second grade, that's when you got moved to a Catholic school. Mm-hmm. And I have never been to a Catholic school. So are there male teachers there as well? Or is it only women teachers? And is it like an all-girls school? Or how was that set up?
That experience was amazing. It was a wonderful school. I don't remember male teachers, but there was, like, because it was a Catholic school, they had a parish. And so that meant that the nuns and the priests, you know, they stayed there, and it had, of course, a church in the school. And so I don't remember any male teachers at that point. They may have come after me because I graduated from eighth grade from that school in 1979. Nikki didn't go until later. I was moved there because my teachers called my mom and dad for a conference and told them that they felt that there was nothing else that they could do for me. They thought that I was bored and that they couldn't give me, I was more advanced, let's put it that way. And they really, because of the classroom sizes and I was just too far advanced for them, and they thought that it would hinder me. So they suggested, there was this school, you know, on the other side of town in Irvington where we live, and they suggested that school. And then my parents put me there. And then it was later that my sister came in and my brother went there. So that it was a wonderful experience because I got to go to school and interact with Italians, people from, you know, the Polish community. You know, I lived with people that are on my block, their Jewish community. And there were a few Blacks, and I interacted more with Blacks when I went to the public high school. So it was more advanced and I learned a lot, and nothing that ever happened to me or my sister, at least that I know as far as my sister, but nothing that ever happened to me negatively happened at that school. As a matter of fact, I believe that God was all in that to keep me close to him as I could.
Okay. So you said you left the Catholic school in eighth grade, and that's when you started going to the Irvington schools, mm-hmm. Irvington High School.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to go to a Catholic high school. I wanted to just keep moving with the people that I knew where it was safe. You know, it was cool. I had good friends. I had really good friends. The Blacks, we had our community at that school, and we used to, you know, spend the night with each other, good friends. And then I was also very good friends with people of the white community, Italians and like I said, Polish and Irish. There were a lot of Irish, but we were all cool. Any racism that I encountered was never ever at that school. So I wanted to move forward with them, but it was the cost at that particular time. I didn't know it, but my parents financially weren't doing well. There was the appearance that we were still doing well, but you know, truth be told, we weren't doing well financially, so they had to send me to a public school in Irvington. And again, best thing that ever happened, because I started to interact again with a whole different people of the community that I actually lived in. And I got to experience a lot more that I would not have experienced if I was going to an all-girls school, because the Catholic elementary school that I went to, it was boys and girls, and we didn't have to wear uniforms. So it was kind of cool. So there was it was a very pretty easy transition for me to go to the public high school there.
Okay. So from you starting at four and experiencing that, and then by second grade, you're going to a Catholic school that you love, that you trust, that you found comfort in, and then because of the household, end up going to a high school. And although now you can look back and think about all the things that you loved about it, at any point, did you feel like you were distrustful of men, or do you feel like that once you were around, you know, the dating years, do you feel like you were attracted to the wrong men or anything like that, like even subconsciously due to your past?
That's a good question. I don't think that I was distrustful of men. I honestly thought that this was what it was supposed to be. Even though as I got older, I knew that there was something dark about it because I didn't talk about it. As a matter of fact, when I was little, I was told if you tell anybody, if you tell your parents, they won't believe you and you will definitely get in trouble. And I believe that because of the type of household I lived in. You know, when I was little, God bless her, she's not like that at all now. My mother is saved and sanctified. Mm-hmm. But back then, she would smack me for what she said I was thinking. So I had no reason to believe that what they weren't saying was true. So no, I didn't have a distrust of men. It was actually, like I said, it was more, this is the way it's supposed to go. This is the way it's supposed to be, because it happened to me from when I was so, you know, started when I was so young, and it continued from place to place. It was different men. And I could not reconcile that this was not okay, since it was different men all the time throughout my life into adulthood, you know, where something happened to me. So I was never distrustful. I know that I avoided certain situations when I could tell as I got older, when I thought that I had some,
like some signs or some red flags.
Yes. But even more that I had a little bit of control over whether I could walk away from the situation. Mm-hmm. So there were times when I avoided something happening, like high school with one of the teachers. I just knew I had some control there. Something in my head told me, you know, I don't have to do what he's telling me. I don't have to go here with him. I don't have to meet him. And so I avoided that situation, because that would have been a whole nother thing. So no, not distrustful, just like, unfortunately, I just believe that this was my life and this is the way it was supposed to go.
And we see where you ended up. So of course, God always has his plans.
Yay.
So we're going to switch gears a little bit. Okay. Now we're moving past high school. And how old were you when you had your first daughter?
19.
Okay, so that's about college, right?
Well, I caught myself taking a gap year because I got pregnant with her. I got pregnant with her August when I graduated for high school. Got pregnant with her in August. So, and it was on purpose. He didn't know, unfortunately, that it was, you know, that it was, I wasn't taking precautions not to, because the house was so dysfunctional, and I felt that I had been taking the brunt of it as much as I could for everybody, for, you know, for my sister, for my brother. I would just, you know, take the hits, not, you know, the punches like physically, but I'm saying just emotionally and all of that, the verbal abuse, whatever, I'm taking the hits. I didn't want to leave them. I just couldn't imagine going to college and leaving them with what was going on in the house. So I didn't take any precautions not to get pregnant, and I got pregnant at 19. And then after I had her, because I had her in May 1984, and immediately after I had her that fall, I started at Montclair State. I went to college because I knew that regardless, I still needed an education so that I could take care of her and try to move on with life.
Okay. And when you were looking at her, you know, as a baby in her crib and watching her grow and whatnot, did that ever bring up past trauma for you or change how you protected her in any way, do you think?
Looking at babies in cribs didn't trigger me. Or looking at her in a crib didn't trigger me. But I was very, very, some might even say, overly protective of where she went and who had her. Like, you know, maybe sometimes they would even not understand to this day, even with my grandchildren. As a matter of fact, it happened yesterday. My daughter posted a picture, and she didn't even realize it, but at the bottom of her bathing suit, I mean, she was kind of sitting like crisscross applesauce, and at the bottom of her bathing suit was revealing a little bit too much. My eyes immediately went there, and I text her and I said, "Hey, take that picture down. There's too many pervs out here." And she said, "What?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Look down." And she said, "Oh my gosh." She said, "She's so tiny," because she is. She's so skinny. She said, "I didn't even realize that it was gapped open like that." And she took it down. So triggers, I don't have the normal triggers like a bathing suit or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, a bathing suit, a crib, nothing like that. But When it came to, and my sister is the same way. I can remember that. Very, very, very protective of where they go, what kind of pictures are put up, and things like that. Just not to give anybody any ideas, because you never know what's really on people's minds.
Absolutely. Let's see. So, what was I gonna say? So we talked about your kids, and you said that that's how you felt about your daughter. Were you more inclined? I know you said at a certain point, you knew that you could walk away from certain situations, once you got older. So were you more inclined, once you did get out of your family home, were you more inclined to stay with what you perceived as stable, due to coming from a dysfunctional household afterwards, and now that you have your daughter?
Yes. Well, this is a double-edged sword, because at this particular point, I had gone through so much dysfunction. I had attempted suicide on one occasion at the age of 12. There was so much. I had gone through so much dysfunction, and still was living in dysfunction, that because of everything that happened to me throughout my life, I was living a life of promiscuity, just to be very honest. So in my mind, I was looking for a good guy. I was looking for a guy that was a lot like my daddy, but then again, not like my daddy, you know,
Right,
because at
good quality.
before, yes, he was a good man, and he was a very in, he's intelligent, and he was charismatic, and he just could, oh gosh, he could sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. But he had his demons. He was dealing with his demons, and he was a womanizer. And it took me a long time to realize that. So I was looking for a guy that, you know, was just a lot like my daddy in a lot of ways, a really good man, and somebody that would provide. But at the same time, somebody who I thought would only have eyes for me. How naive was I? So, yeah, I was looking for that so I could create a stable environment and a stable home for me and my daughter. But the problem was, I never dealt with those demons. I never dealt with everything that I had been through. So I was still very, very self-destructive. You would never know it from looking at me that I was, you know, riddled with low self-esteem, and that I never felt special. There were all kinds of things going on with me that I never dealt with. So, chronic depression set in, anxiety set in, self-destructive behaviors, addiction, all of this, and then coupled with somebody that, you know, loved me, did love me, and I loved him, and he was a great provider, but he had his own demons too. I mean, little did I know there was a spirit of womanizing there as well. So we both have had part in that marriage falling apart, but I definitely did my part to tear it down, even though all I ever wanted was a stable home.
And that's understandable. And you've come a very long way, as we
Yes,
know.
Lord. Yes, Lord.
So to get us to our conclusion today, how do you feel from everything that we talked about today? And God came in and he blessed you more than you even knew at the time. And now you can look back and see it and you can feel it. How do you feel God held your hand for the very, or when did you know God really held your hand for the first time and you felt it and you knew it?
That's very interesting. I have to say that there was twice, because it was two different encounters. It was one encounter where I knew that he was real. Like, oh gosh, I always believed in him, but I could feel his presence. I think that's what, you know, what you're asking me, how I knew I knew, like, tangible almost feeling that I knew, not, you know. One was, my parents were having a huge blow up. They were having a fight, and my mother was talking about, you know, demons and spirits and things like that. And she was just going off, and she was going off talking about demons and spirits, and she tr I just tried to get away from it. All of a sudden, I mean, I was just running out the house. I was feeling sick. I was feeling nauseous, like I was going to throw up. And I pushed on the bathroom door to try to get away from it. And my dad was in the bathroom, and I didn't know it. And he pushed back. And when he pushed back, I dropped like a ton of bricks. And as I opened my eyes and he was over me, fanning me, I just felt the glow of God. At the time, I was dating a guy whose father was a pastor. He was a pastor of a church. And so,
But how old were you when this was?
oh gosh, Sony wasn't quite two yet. So it
Okay.
might have been, I might have been 20, 20 or 21. And I went into his home, and I was telling him about it because I needed some counseling. I needed to try to understand what just happened to me, and not even spiritually. I was just telling him about it. So he sat me down, and he said, "Keisha, do you believe in angels?" And I said, "Of course, yes, they exist. Angels exist." He said, "Do you believe in demons?" And I said, "I don't know about all that." And he was like, "Well, how can you believe in angels and not believe
One
in
and not
demons?"
the other.
Right, let's read. So that's when he was educating me, of course, about really about Satan and the his devils and his demons and all that. Anyway, he explained to me that really what he believes happened to me at that time, was that God was protecting me from the demons that were coming, that were in that place at that particular time, that were trying to take a hold of me because of what was going on between my mom and my dad at that time. It was a huge satanic warfare. And it was trying, you know, it was coming up against me, and I just, like, there's no other explanation for it. Nothing was wrong with me before that. I just felt overwhelmed from all the yelling and all the talk of, you know, the demons that were in this house and the demons that were supposedly surrounding my dad and this and that. And then, like I said, he just simply pushed back on the door because he was in the bathroom. He wanted me to come in, and I dropped. So that was the first time that I realized that there were spiritual forces protecting me. And that was 21. The second time that really changed my life, I mean, like changed my life, was I guess I was 41. I was in prison, and I had just gotten to the prison because, you know, there was jail before you go to the prisons, and so I had just gotten to the prison in West Virginia, and it just wasn't going well, and I was feeling, you know, very overwhelmed, and I went, you know, got to the phones, and I called my mom, and I was crying, and I was heaving, not just tears falling down my face. I was heaving. And, you know, she said, "Keisha, do you trust me?" And I said, "Yes, of course I trust you." And she said, "I need you to listen. I need you to do exactly what I tell you to do." And she said, "I want you to say word for word, God, give me the peace that passes all understanding, to guard my heart and mind, Christ Jesus." And when I said that through crying, I was, "God, give me your peace that surpasses all understanding." You know, I'm just heaving. And as soon as I finished it, it was like, woof. There was peace. The heaving stopped. My arms dropped. It felt like everything in that particular dorm had just stopped and got quiet. It was immediate. It wasn't, "Oh, breathe, calm down." As soon as I finished it, it just woof. And that's when I knew. That's when my life changed from "Jesus Christ is the Son of God" to "I know him intimately." That's when I started to study my word and start walking in my gifts.
Okay, so if you had, thank you for sharing. That
Sure.
was very powerful. And I'm not trying to overwhelm you, but if you had anything that you wanted to tell any listeners that we have today, that's going through something similar, or anything that's on your heart that you feel God needs shared to the masses, or anything like that, what would you like to say?
I would just say that I know that this is a lot, you know. I know that this is a lot, but this is really not, even though I'm going to be sharing a lot of stories about some really painful and traumatic stuff in my life, and I want other people to share. This is more about sharing because when you spit the truth in the enemy's face, his power leaves. And that's what I want people to take away from this. Don't carry it with you for 40 years and then, you know, try. It's so hard to try to get better the longer you keep it in. When you keep it in, you're holding his secret and he has more power over you, no matter what the pain is, whether it's sexual abuse, whether it's physical abuse, whether it's racism, whether it's, you know, feeling underappreciated and overworked, because that can be painful too. I don't care what it is. You don't keep it in. Just let it go. Spit out the truth in his face and start the healing process. Because no matter what, as soon as you open your mouth and start to tell the truth, you are more than halfway home. That's it. And that's my time for today. Oh my gosh, I never ever thought that you would ask so many thoughtful questions. I really appreciate you. You don't know how much. I just, oh my gosh, this just added a new facet to our already very beautiful and special relationship, because you know I love you. But thank you for being here, and I don't think this will be your last time, right? I hope it won't.
I hope
But
it either.
yeah, but that's our time for today. And for now, I thank everyone for listening. And again, I thank my very special guest, Sydney, for being here with me. And until next time, again, I'm Keisha. Hold on, because peace is yours. Remember that joy is peace dancing, and peace is joy when it's at rest. Be blessed and be healed. Bye for now.